Well, it's 1 o'clock. I can say afternoon, but for some people, it's really morning because then some of us really, part of us aren't really here. Anyway, I'm going to tell you, we're going to talk about the U.S. Constitution. We're going to talk about a U.S. institution that dropped the ball. And we're going to tell you why that pretty much makes internet sales tax, which is being charged in 18 states, somewhat unconstitutional. And it's even worse is that the states that are charging it know that it's unconstitutional and have recognized the problem, but they still want the money. You know, and I guess, you know, and please forgive me, I did a little bit too much last night. There was a movie where you say follow the money. That was the theme song about it. This is kind of that type of story. So we're going to go to the Supreme Court. And when I'm talking about the Supreme Court, I'm talking about the U.S. Supreme Court, not the Georgia Supreme Court or anything like that, because in recognition, they do create what is called the law of the land, that once they cite something or make a decision, both federal courts as well as state courts are theoretically supposed to follow it in regards to federal issues. Now, what this is about, this lecture or this discussion, because it's going to be a discussion, is about interstate commerce. That means that you're buying, you live in Georgia and you're buying something online in a different state. Intrastate commerce is not regulated by the federal constitution. It's regulated by the state of Georgia, using Georgia as an example, obviously. So, in about the 80s, there came this great case called Superior Auto. Superior Auto was a tax case. And it pretty much, and it was an interstate commerce case. An interstate commerce case, which is actually money and taxation. And it was determined, and this is what they call Jesus, I really should not drink at night. It was a waterline case. It is cited in almost every interstate commerce taxation case from federal court and state courts since it was created. And the part that it was cited was it created a four-prong test to determine if a state's laws violated the Interstate Commerce Clause, the U.S. Interstate Commerce Clause. Because the issue behind it is that states obviously could create favoritism for their industry and therefore impede commerce, which goes all the way back to the concepts, and we'll give you a basic history lesson under the Articles of Confederation. Before the U.S. Constitution, there was the Articles of Confederation. God, he's giving a history lesson. I should have stayed awake during civics class. No. Okay. Quick, I'll give you cheat notes. Don't worry. We'll get you good. Well, the Articles of Confederation failed because pretty much you had states creating economic barriers to other states so that they would create favoritism. And that was actually one of the major issues of the Articles, the U.S. Constitution. The biggest issue that we're going to concentrate on is one of the prongs that would allow a state to have a legal law, a law that did not violate interstate commerce is that the entity that they were trying to bring into their state had to have what is called nexus. Nexus is defined as a physical establishment, what some people call brick and mortar. If there's not and that can be in a house, you know, and there are some questions, does an internet server that's fully active, does that create a physical establishment? There are some states that say it does and not, but there has to be something physical in that state for that state to basically say, we can now tax you. We can create taxes. Now, taxes are not just income tax, which it is also a sales tax. And that is basically An income tax is called a direct tax. A sales tax or a VAT tax, value attributable tax, is called an indirect tax. One, because it's an indirect based on a transaction versus an income tax of the company. So everybody was really happy. The world was good and rosy. And then came along Quill. Quill was not a tax case. It was not an interstate commerce case. It was a due process case. It was literally, nobody was questioning, could that state tax Quill? Quill brought up the issue of, I am only doing internet commerce in that other state. Therefore, that state doesn't have personal jurisdiction over me. That's all Quill was. There's great articles, but if you get it down to it, that's all Quill was about. The U.S. Supreme Court, now remember, they had just already passed complete auto. They said Nexus was physical establishment for interstate commerce. Now we have another part of the U.S. Constitution, and it says due process, which before Quill said Nexus, physical establishment. Supreme Court said, they're making a lot of money over there. And we really don't think that from an economic substance perspective, we are going to allow from the perspectives of due process that they can't say that they don't have a physical establishment there because they're going to have economic benefits. So based on those economic benefits, we're going to allow that other state to bring them in without a P. Now, they could have addressed the issue at that moment that they have a definition of nexus for interstate commerce, and now they're creating a totally different definition for nexus for due process. They pretty much stated this, and it's in Quill. It's the last paragraph of Quill. We recognize that this is in conflict with our current legal definition of nexus in interstate commerce. But it is not our policy or our belief to create law. We're going to let Congress do that. So we acknowledge that there's a problem. We acknowledge there's a conflict, and oh, by the way, Congress, please fix it, because that's not our job. That they created the problem, that goes over to the side. They create the problem, and in this regard, the Supreme Court drops the ball. Now, you have now two definitions of nexus, one's for due process, one's for interstate commerce. The states started to find in about the year 2000 that the bubbles burst and they're having deficits. They need money. But it doesn't make sense to inflict money, tax people that are residents. Let's tax non-residents. So they created the State Streamlined Sales Tax Project, which was to create unifying definitions so that every state would have the same type of sales tax, not the same rate, each state and locality will set their own rate, but the same definitions and the same purpose. And they decided to change the definition of nexus. They basically said nexus is wherever the consumer is, whereas before it was always wherever the retailer was. As an aside, Europe had already done this in 2002. In 2002, Europe passed the sixth directive and pretty much said, for the EU, nexus now means wherever the consumer is, no longer the retailer, but that only is in regards to people, to entities that are outside of the EU. For the people in the EU, you can do whatever the hell you want. The US lost that world tax case also. Congratulations, we don't win in the World Tax Court. It's one of our great, you know, we control the world economically and business-wise, but we can't win in a friggin' court. So they also, the SSTP, stated, we respect that this is in violation of the U.S. Constitution, and we respect that this really cannot be legal unless we meet three criteria. But we're still going to do it. Yes?
Well, as a practical matter, I guess I should say this. I have a political job. I work for a state. I've worked on Streamline since 2001
right.
in the legislative process. Mm-hmm. As a practical matter, what you're collecting in Streamline is not sales tax. It's use tax. And that's a bit of a fig leaf in a lot of ways. But it's important because one of the aspects, one of the requirements of being involved, when the state's involved in the Streamline process, is that they can't create new taxes specifically for entry into Streamline. You have to have on the books a use tax, which is required by every citizen of a state with a use tax to pay if you purchase something from out of state. It's the flip side to sales tax. So
it's the backstop to sales tax.
Yeah, but that I mean, still legally passed, still constitutional. And what Streamline does is require the retailer to collect and remit the use tax that the individual would otherwise have to assess himself during his taxation period and when he has to pay.
But remember, you're also making a retailer in a different state than your state, in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, that's correct.
Collect your state's tax, which legally, okay, there is nothing on the books of that state unless they join the state Streamline.
Right.
Set.
Yeah. So if you're in Streamline, what Streamline is doing is saying these two states have an agreement, have a compact. And state A, where the purchaser is, has agreement with state B, where the retailer is, and state B is requiring the retailer that has nexus in his state to collect and remit.
Right, but what it also is doing is basically, the SSTP basically is redefining interstate commerce.
Yes,
Okay. And it acknowledges, the SSTP acknowledges, that unless either the Supreme Court or the U.S. Congress passes a law, okay, in essence, they recognize that it's unconstitutional. And in fact, the state of Kentucky, because what you're doing, what has been done, is that it's putting an obligation on a non-resident of a state
mm-hmm.
to collect a different state's sales tax. There is nothing on the books, okay? That's a regulation of interstate commerce. Because it's a collection of it.
Well, right, but it's a regulation it's an exercise in sovereign authority of the states to enter into agreements with other states to do this. Just like states can enter into an agreement for transfers of prisoners and extradition.
That's true, but there is no federal law that prohibits it. There is no federal constitutional law that's sitting there. You know, transfer of prisoners is a great example. There's no federal law that says you can't do it, okay? There is a federal law that says you can't do what the SSTP, not you. Please, if I say you, please.
I understand.
Okay.
You
is a very general terminology. Yeah, I'm not, and please don't touch him. You know, don't jump on him, please.
The government is here to help us.
That's right. Well, no, he's here to express, and I value your opinion,
right.
Please. Is that there is no question that a state can enter into agreements with other states.
Mm-hmm.
No one is disputing that. But there is also an issue that when a state enters into agreement with another state that violates the U.S. Constitution, okay, then it becomes a federal issue. All right. And when that state, by joining the SSTP, has also acknowledged that it is a federal constitutional issue, and that unless the federal government or the Supreme Court resolves that issue, that this change of definition is illegal, okay, then my issue comes about is that, and I'll be with you in a moment, sir, my issue comes about that you have a state legislature. I mean, if the states had created this pact, and if the states had stated, like the state of Oregon, okay, actually Oregon or Washington, please forgive me, I can't remember which, that says, when Congress or the Supreme Court says that this is legal, we're going to do this. It's an automatic light switch. They have all the legislation passed, you know, but when it is, I'm not here, okay? I'm not up here lecturing about anything, because there is no question that a state in regards to intrastate commerce, okay, can do whatever they want. But when a state basically tells a retailer in another state that has no physical presence to basically, you're now going to do something in regards to our state, that's a regulation of interstate commerce. That's also an issue in regards to small business, because you're putting a burden on small business that now they're required in another state to collect Georgia sales tax.
If I could, I don't want to bogart the thing, but coming at it from a different perspective than I think most of the people in the room, you know, and every state is different. I'm from North Carolina, so we have a very specific setup. You know, the funding sources from sales tax go to different states for different reasons. Yes, and online retailers are still going to have access to North Carolina courts. They're still going to send their vehicles on North Carolina roads. And as a practical matter, why shouldn't they pay for the benefits that they're deriving, that our state provides, and that are undercutting our indigenous bricks and mortar industries by having a percentage deduction from the cost?
Okay, and my statement to you, and please, I'm just going by hair. You have more hair than I do, so I'm assuming I'm older.
Okay. Yeah, problem.
Okay, I'm just making that assumption. I used to have hair. I don't think anybody ever saw me in this room with hair, but is that I've heard the argument in regards to the mail catalog companies. Okay, and they were totally, you know, and I was around at that time, unfortunately, and I was doing tax analysis at that time, and pretty much after the brouhaha went down, it was pretty much proven that pretty much the state, the catalog companies didn't do anything. All right, there is internet business in your state. It is not, you know, it's not in every other state but your state. Okay,
right.
You have a lot of small businesses that are in your state that are now having the same problem. Okay. It's they're utilizing other states. It pretty much washes. Okay, there's never been one state that's been hurt and another state's been benefited. There's never been any legislature. Okay, so by saying, okay, that company is pretty much doing something and therefore my state's losing money, I can find equal amount of companies in your state doing the same thing.
Doesn't that wash both ways? Should it be fair or unfair for everybody in the same way?
Restricting commerce. Okay, you're restricting commerce and I'm going to say again, SSTP restricts commerce and puts a burden on the small retailer and small business. Okay, a big business doesn't care. Okay, a big business is sitting there and having a great time. Why? Because the SSTP has tilted the level playing field. I swear I see your hand.
Okay.
I will get to you. We're not, you're close. I also see the gentleman in the back. I have a somewhat good memory. Okay. Has tilted the playing field so that even with the exemption that they're talking about, okay, small business is going to get hurt by this. And small business has gotten hurt by this. Small business has stopped. A lot of small businesses have stopped using the internet. How is that addressed by the SSTP? Okay, it's not. Okay, it's because they're saying, well, I'm only going to go after the big ones. Okay, who are your big, really big internet providers? Bookstores, big ones, Borders. I will make you a bet that there's at least one Borders in your state.
Right.
Wait. And if you follow California law, okay, and I'll bring a different state in. If you follow California law, any interstate sales from Borders.com to the residents of California, because Borders has a physical building in that state, you now will charge sales tax. Wait. I'm going to come back to you. I swear to you, but he'll kill me. So can we get back to the gentleman back there for a moment?
Well, actually, I was going to, I think it was me, but I was going to actually wait and see, have you go a little bit further in your talk before I ask my question. So.
Okay. All right, that's fine. Then we'll move back to this gentleman in the front, and then we'll go back to the gentleman wearing the F.G.
All right. Let me just preface this by saying that I don't agree with this. I absolutely do not agree with this, but from a legal standpoint, there is precedent for something like this process that is happening. Georgia, for example, in 1985 passed the Lost Tax Initiative, which allowed voters to pass 1% sales taxes in every county, and that would go towards property tax relief. And then came the more generalized special purpose tax, 1% right. sales taxes, which are also used to fund various things
within
county specific projects
within the state.
Within the state,
right.
But the thing is that it captures income from persons who do not live in that county. So I can consume something in DeKalb County and pay their tax, even though I live in Fulton County.
Right.
So this is the same idea, only expanded to a larger scale.
But there's a big difference, and here's your big difference. I think I prefaced this, and if I didn't, I apologize. Any state can do whatever they want in their own state. And that's intrastate commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not dispute that. They have a constitutional right to do that. I do not argue with them. If there are certain states that have a stadium tax, okay, that basically was created because the stadium basically created a batch of income and they create sales tax. And if you go to the stadium to watch, I think it's Michigan. Please forgive me. The stadium, all the business around there have an extra tax to support the state. I have no problem with that. The state can do whatever it wants, and the state residents can vote or not vote accordingly to the sales tax within that state. What we are talking about is putting obligations, okay, on another state's residents to collect that state, okay? One of the big examples, if you want to take a look, you can take a look at Blizzard. Blizzard basically has, for some of you people who may not know, World of Warcraft. They are now charging sales tax of 18 states. They voluntarily, and that was the big issue, they have voluntarily agreed to join the SSTP project with the acknowledgement that if they don't, if the SSTP by constitutional law becomes invalid, because it can become invalid if Congress basically says, we're not going to allow this. We're not going to allow the redefinition occur under a state level when we have a Supreme Court case that says, you need nexus. So therefore, the change of nexus. Blizzard has pretty much said, hey, apply for a refund. We'll give you back your money. Even though they are currently, and of course, trust me, and I think everyone would agree, Blizzard is then going to ask for a refund of all the money they've paid to the states. And I have no idea how the states are going to handle that, by the way, you know, because that could be a major outflow of cash. Yes.
Back in the early 80s, I lived in Louisiana, and Orleans Parish raised their sales tax to like 11%. Everybody else was 7%.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately everybody went over to Jefferson Parish to buy their cars and their refrigerators and all that kind of thing. And that went through the state courts, and because then Orleans Parish tried to tell all those people that bordered them that they had to charge the sales tax and check the residency of the people and all this and everything. And in the state courts, that got shut down.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago, and that was state. I know that's completely within the state, but they handled it that way.
Right. I mean, again, you know, I have no problem with what the states do to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just a microcosm of...
Right. The problem I have is, you know, and I understand the gentleman's... By the way, I do understand the state's position, right? The state's position pretty much is there's something called... Not all states have it, but the majority of Pitt states that have a sales tax have a use tax.
To be in streamline, you have to have a use tax.
Yeah, but there's an issue. That's why you have a lot of states. There are only, I think, 18 or 22 now in streamline, and the rest are like tending because there are a lot of states that don't have a use tax, and they're not ready to incorporate yet into it. But they are members of the SSTP. I will be with you in a minute. Okay. I swear to this. but for everyone's knowledge, a use tax is in essence what we call a backstop to a sales tax. If somebody, I mean, and it's on the books,
mm-hmm.
that pretty much says that if you went out and bought something on the internet, and it was a consumer type item, let's call it a software package, that you would be required to declare on your, I mean, you should go down, but now they have lines on your income tax return. It's really nice. Hi. This is how much product I have, you know, that I bought that I owe you use tax on, and I will pay it with my income tax return.
And tax on honesty.
Yeah, well, it's a tax on honesty issue, and pretty much there was a belief, because I never saw anybody really prove it, that there was tremendous non-compliance. No one could prove there was non-compliance. Nobody really said there was non-compliance, but the issue was, shit, nobody's going to pay tax, you know, voluntarily. So, of course, there's non-compliance. That was their logic behind it. So, and that's why they're now, there's that issue. That's why they pretty much said, hey, you know what, our backstop use tax isn't working, so we're going to have a retailer who is on the internet come and charge sales tax and collect it. Yes, and then we're going to go. Maybe we won't go farther.
I'm just trying to make sure I understand both sides of this. Effectively, then, once by your definition, one state has projected its laws into another state against their citizens, and if two states agree to do that and have a reciprocal agreement, that's perfectly legal. However, since this is a projection of laws in regard to interstate commerce, that is precluded by the Constitution. That's what your point is.
My point, right. And okay. By the way, my point, unfortunately, and I'm not disagreeing with his statement of
right.
how the states look, my point is under the SSTP, they also acknowledge my point. It's really nice. They pretty much said, yeah, we acknowledge that this is a constitutional issue. I mean, there is states, I believe the state of Kentucky, when they joined the SSTP, actually issued a newsletter saying, we recognize that there is a problem here. We recognize that really from an intrastate perspective, we're good, but from having a third party come in and do this on the behalf of our state, we have really some issues here that should get resolved in either the Congress or the U.S. Supreme Court. And until they do, it is very questionable whether what we're doing is legal or not.
So in some ways,
But I believe it's 2005 is when the SSTP met the requirements. It was a certain amount of states and a certain amount of the population had to have joined, and the states had to conform with all laws. It then became effective in those states, and there was an amnesty period, and I believe it keeps getting extended on and on, where you could voluntarily sign up, and they literally went and the SSTP went after major internet sellers to have them voluntarily sign up because of this hammer. And this hammer was, understand the law is the law as of the date of the passing. If it does become constitutional, you owed us all this money retroactively.
Whoa.
Okay, so why don't you go collect it now? And if it becomes unconstitutional, then we'll have a discussion about who
so did. So the states are kind of looking at it. I mean, I'm putting words in their mouth because it's really
well, not his mouth. I mean, not his.
I'm just saying the states in general are
an avatar.
Yeah.
Okay. If as long as you're okay with it, because
yeah.
We had, I think 2 years ago, we had another state, and they really started to go. And it wasn't fair. I mean, you're expressing a view, and I think it's a valid view.
And there have been discussions. I've never heard this officially, but I've been in a lot of these meetings where they bring up the legislation, because there have been some growing pains with the normalization of the tax structure of every state. There have been a lot of problems in Florida, I know, but that there have been assurances that once X amount of states representing X amount of the population are under a streamlined system that Congress will act to remove the nexus requirement. However, one Congress can't bind another, and that's just talk. So take that for whatever.
So they're kind of living on the premise of better to beg 1,000 pardons than to have asked permission. And if they come back later and say, no, really, you really can't do that, they'll say, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
But if otherwise, they get their money in the meantime, and that's kind of seems to what's being happening.
Yeah, they'll still sue. Okay. I mean, the people under Streamline will go and say we want our money back, and they'll have the ability to. I mean, there's no state that doesn't have three dozen tax cases like this year where something is found to be unconstitutional or applied unconstitutionally or overpayments, and you know it's painful and it's expensive, and because not only do you have the case, everything. I'm going to shut up now. But yeah, they'll be able to go in and get stuff, get their money back
right.
if it is unconstitutional.
The issue you have, and by the way, I'm not disagreeing, there are constant sales tax states in regards to interstate issues, okay? The issue that's never been is, can you sue a state for basically creating an unconstitutional law, and it and basically you voluntarily agreeing to it, and not basically, I mean, we're getting into real esoteric legal issues, but if you know a law is unconstitutional, but you're following it anyway because you voluntarily agreed to do this, is the state really liable for the return of the money?
Well, there's an implied threat.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you could pay under protest, but a lot of companies aren't.
But that preserves your legal
right.
status.
Right, no, yeah, there's a young lady back there.
I'm good.
You sure?
Trust me.
I believe you. I'm just, you know.
The one thing I have a question about is very simplistic, perhaps, very.
That's okay.
It seems like the question here is reinventing the wheel. I mean, if we go back to the Sears catalog of 18 whatever, and then we come forward, this seems like the same question that would have been asked of catalog merchants.
It was.
And the question obviously was answered.
Well, what the question... No, the question went away.
Because?
Because pretty much the... What happened was, after the big brouhaha of the catalog... You know, we're not talking about the Sears catalog of the 1800s. We're talking about really in the 80s, when the catalog companies really came out. Pretty much in the 80s, all the states had surplus budgets. So all of a sudden, they were saying, we're losing money, but they were having surplus budgets. So there was a problem. How can you, you know, it's kind of like contra-logical.
Right.
How do I have a surplus budget and I'm losing all this money? And so pretty much, and then there was an analysis done by a batch of economic guys that pretty much said, you know, they're really not taking away that much business, and the business they're taking away is because it was not available to the individuals within the geographical area anyway. Because, you know, if you're in a major city, you can pretty much get anything anytime. I mean, it means you got to get up. And I recognize there are people that are house locked, that can't get out. And I recognize that. But the majority of a major city, if you want something, there is somebody in your city that's going to sell it to you. So the issue is, where were the catalog companies making most of their money? Well, they're making some in cities that basically didn't have that service available to them, and that service was not to the next county. You couldn't, like, go a county over and get it, because why would you wait 3 weeks, 4 weeks from the time of your order from a catalog to time to get it, if you can get in your car and go 20 miles to get it? So that's pretty much what killed the catalog debate. The internet debate is more of an instantaneous issue. One, you just push the button in 3-4 days. A second is, operating an internet site is a hell of a lot cheaper than operating a brick and mortar site. They can handle a lot more business. But actually, the only businesses that are hurt are, ooh, small business. And the SSTP doesn't even the playing field, because your small business guy still has the problem of compliance. And the big business guys, and I think that I'm going to ask Scott maybe next year to put this in, is we're going to talk about the internet and small businesses, because pretty much, whereas the internet, when it first came about, leveled the playing field like you wouldn't believe against big business. Big business was going nuts. They really hated it. And now... There are laws coming about that are basically moving small business to a detriment, and basically they're not going into. I get calls from people all the time saying, I am going to start up an internet website. What does that mean? And we go through it, and I go through the projections, and these companies are going to basically beat the, I think it's $500,000, is that if you make under $500,000, you don't have to, you can, you You don't have to file, collect taxes with the SSDP, but you have to file for an exemption. So as soon as you file for your exemption, you're in their system, and as soon as you go over $500,000, well, it's not, if you read the law correctly, at least my interpretation of the law correctly, it's not that $1 above the $500,000, it's the $501, you know, that you're supposed to collect. So if you thought you were going to only make $500,000 and therefore be exempt, and you go past that $1 threshold, oh, well, now you owe sales tax on that extra $500,000 that you didn't collect, but you probably didn't buy the compliance software that would have been able for you to charge it and collect it. So assuming a 6% overall, how many businesses can take a $30,000 hit in one shot because they forgot to collect sales tax, which yeah, they are now legally liable for?
Back in the 1980s, it was covered under the mail order business. I sold compatibles back then, and that helped to create an incentive for small businesses like that who were in the growing PC compatible industry back then. Mm-hmm. And so why, you know, in my mind, why can't they deregulate SSTP? Why can't they level the playing field so that creates the incentive?
They understand. There's a part of the SSTP that I agree with 100%, and that is simplification and getting common definitions. Though I don't like how they went about it, I applaud them for the effort of it. Okay, they are pretty much not having the ability to recognize small business as an issue. They keep trying. I mean, there's an Ohio proposal, and I think it came about, or it's been about, but it's around. We're pretty much what they've now started. Now, before, as of 2005 to, let's say, today, because I don't know if it's been passed or not, and if you know, that would be great. I'd appreciate that. Is that they're thinking now that a person in your own state, selling to your own state, obviously you charge the correct sales tax. Yeah. But if you're selling to somebody in another state, instead of having to figure out what state, what stadium, what composite it is, that state, so let's say Georgia, let's say somebody in Georgia is now selling to somebody in to New Jersey. New Jersey is a member. That New Jersey will give it a composite rate, a melded rate, and then all you have to do is collect that melded rate. The problem with that is that there is a potential that the melded rate may be higher than the real rate in that locality. And therefore, there has to be created a refund mechanism because you collected too much sales tax. And so who gets to process the refund? Okay? So the SSTP is still grappling with all these issues and ideas and modifications that they think, which obviously if you have a single rate to apply to small business, it's going to be very much help.
Why not make it like 2 or 3%?
Well, it's up to the state. The state basically has every right, and the locality within every state has every right to charge whatever rate they want to charge. Give or take. I mean, you can go within the state legislation. They're not looking to per se, you know, make this easier or better. I mean, it'd be great if every state would just have, hi, you're in our state, you do this, and if you're not in our state, here's your rate. Done. And that's what it is.
They've done it where it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
And they've gotten rid of, like, for example, the only one I know is North Carolina. There were 7 or 8 different rates of sales tax, you know, which were buying. For example, farm equipment was taxed at 1%, and entertainment equipment like cameras were taxed at 3%. It had to be 0 or 7. And so they zeroed out everything that was below a certain point to be 0 on those items by state law. There's no sales tax on those items. Everything else is 7, and there are a few local rates that vary, but the local rate is 5.
Absolutely not. I don't give a crap at all.
So, and that was one of the requirements, was that everybody had to have uniform rates, so the vendor had the ability to know what the rate was going to have to be.
Just go
If you want to come up to the panel, they're inviting you up to the panel. I don't give a crap. Boy, now you're now.
I don't want to be an important figure.
That's too late now. Don't worry.
Okay.
Don't worry. We could. All right. The problem that you have is though a state basically has created one single rate, and they are required by the SSDP to create a matrix. You know, and what we're now getting into is the details of how the SSTP works, not the issue of is the SSTP constitutional or unconstitutional, and what the hell do you do when they collect it, and they may have to repay it back. But also the localities are also the biggest problem, is that the localities, there are certain states that only have one state tax rate, and the localities don't have any other tax rates. And then you have the states like New Jersey, which have about... I think 33 localities that have sales tax. You got New York, which will sooner or later get their legislature together and join the SSTP. And New York only has 95 localities that have fluctuation tax rates. So Illinois has also a lot of tax rates locality. So it's not, you know, the definitions are right, but you're not going to get a rate. And the SSTB is trying to grapple with that rate now, a single rate for out-of-state retailers to reduce the compliance issue. But they haven't based it, but it's under consideration.
Okay. I guess Texas must not be part of it because we're all over the place, all over the map too. But you kind of answered my question, or it was already brought up about differing rates. So I'll just ask. So it's obvious that the states have kind of put together this thing that they know is it needs to be challenged in court, there needs to be a law, and it needs to go through the Supreme Court. So do you think that there is a time frame of when that's going to actually happen? Or because you know that there's a certain point, depending on what Congress does, and the courts are probably going to keep on kicking it back until Congress does something. So do you think that there's going to actually be some movement on it, or is this thing going to kind of be floating out there for a long time?
There has been movement since 2004 in front of Congress. There have been various bills, both pro and con SSTP, that have been submitted to Congress for consideration, and they pretty much get stalled in committee. I mean, as I said, this headache got created because of the U.S. Supreme Court. If the U.S. Supreme Court never had made the Quill decision or had addressed the nexus issue of interstate commerce in Quill and not left it to Congress, then there isn't this inherent issue.
Do you think as long as Democrats control Congress, that's probably not going to move very far?
Guess what? The Republicans controlled Congress and it didn't move very far. And and I don't think with the Democrats controlling Congress, it's going to move pretty far. What my belief is that somebody is going to sue. And when the states, the SSTP states, are going to actually pray that somebody sues, and that it's going to get pushed up to the Supreme Court. And hopefully, the Supreme Court, instead of ducking the issue, is going to basically grant certiorari and make a decision. Because, I mean, that's my belief of what the states are praying for.
Well, somebody will sue. I mean,
yeah,
I
sooner or later. Sooner or later, somebody's got to sue, and at which time, yeah. I think every SSTP state is going to sit there and try and get that case not resolved, just so that it gets in front of the Supreme Court.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because, you know, they're more and more out there to hang out and dry if it's unresolved for a long time and then they lose. So better to actually get the question resolved, I would think.
Well, it is and it's not because, okay, now we're going to move a little bit to the left or the right. Geez, where the frig was that Kahlua? I really could use that. I would have shared, by the way.
That's after last night.
I understand. So the issue is that what would cause a large public company to really push this issue? And I'm going to tell you, it's greed. And the greed is, if I'm collecting from you and I'm sending it to the state, it's no effect to me. And I can file a under protest claim or not. You know, it really doesn't matter. But is it going to affect my stock price? If I'm a public company, is it going to affect my stock price? And the SSTP is a sales tax. That's what it is. It's a sales slash use tax. Everybody heard about, or maybe you haven't heard, and boy, are you blessed. There are FASBAs out about what you're required to now put on financial statements in regards to income tax, or in regards to taxes. It's a tax issue. And it's in regards to state taxes, and it's in regards to federal taxes, and it's a more likely than not. More likely than not, if you take a position and you believe that you're going to lose that position in front of a state or federal taxing authority, you are now required to put that on your financial statements. If you put that on your financial statements, that's going to have an effect on your stock price. So that would be a real great motivation, as you stated, to get out there and get this resolved, because I may have to be creating this giant, giant contingent liability of having to pay back all this stuff. One little itty bitty problem. Sales and use tax does not fall under that FASBA. Does not. It's only income tax. Only income tax. So I could be building up this major, major contingency that I might have to basically refund the money. Of course, I'm going to put on the other side that the states are going to have to refund it to me. You know, which, you know, more likely than not, who knows?
I got to catch a flight.
But the issue there is no sales tax. I don't have to put it on the financials. Therefore, it has no effect. This controversy has no effect on my stock price. So I have no push come to shove. Yes, sir.
Okay. I just want you to know that being a county tax auditor from Alabama, most of us are opposed to the...
You guys are all over the place.
Yes, most of us are opposed to it. For the very simple reason that Alabama is going to require that, should they ever go active, they take over all sales and use tax collections from everybody. And we've recently discovered that when people came out from under the state's collection authority, that they actually had an increase of about 20 to 30% since the state wasn't actually looking out for the collections, except their own.
I really got to get this alcohol out of my system. You want to repeat that one more time?
The most of the counties and the cities in Alabama oppose the sales tax project that you've been discussing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them. Because the state of Alabama has said they want to take over all the collections if they should ever go active with this thing. They are one of the non-participating members, I guess you could say.
Yep. So I understand.
We also have a couple of state legislators who have their eye on certain local tax money because they want to fund their own projects, but that gets into a whole other thing, and that's right. Why they're opposing it.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose if the SSTP went through, they would give up whatever opposition they had.
Mm. Yeah, I would believe that every state, like the state of Alabama, which currently... though a member, you are a member, believe it or not, of the SSTP, you just haven't conformed to the laws of the SSTP. You know, every state other than, I think, New Hampshire, yes, it's where I live, what can I tell you, is not a member of the SSTP. I believe Alabama is a member, but not a, it's joined the organization, it gives input to the organization, but it is not conformed to the SSTP rules and regulations.
Presently, yes.
Right. I think that if the federal court and or Congress so states that the SSTP redefinition of nexus is legal, I believe that the state of Alabama will conform to the laws, just so that it's not going to want to be the only state out there. Not.
Well, Alabama's got a reputation for being the last state to do anything, or close to the last state to do anything.
I'm sure you and New Hampshire are going to fight for that distinction on this one.
We were one of the last states to get a title law, and that happened after the Wall Street Journal said, if you're stealing a car, bring it to Alabama. They'll say your title and a registration are no problem.
I really got to move. The young lady in the back. Oh, okay.
This is not necessarily a tax question, but I'm a first-year law student, and I was wondering if you could tell me, if they redefine nexus, how will that affect other interstate commerce like warranty law and things of that nature, or will it?
I will give you my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Obviously, the SSTP only is in regards to sales and use tax. If basically I sold a product over interstate lines and it had attached to it a warranty, okay, the warranty still was valid whether or not it was sold in my state or another state, depending on state law. I mean, you got to go into state law to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's essentially a contract, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it'll be enforceable, you know, under the various different clauses. And there's historically been sort of a dichotomy between sales tax and, say, long-arm statutes,
right,
or, you know, advertising other states, holding yourself out as a retailer is usually enough if they decide you've done it enough, you know, billboards, you know, such like that, to get you in the courts of a state. You know, that was one of you said the due process question. So, you know, you may see a more normalization between if nexus, the requirement for nexus is either eliminated or heavily modified, you'd probably see a whole separate body of law that was more like the Chicago steer cases that get moved into, you know, sort of conceptually slid over.
But if we're going to talk about, if we get into that and we flow with your question, here's a question I have for you. Jeez, I always do that, don't I? It really is. I've now changed the definition of nexus. Federal law, I've now changed it. Auto is gone, or at least the nexus aspect no longer is a PE. It now means any economic presence whatsoever. Does that mean that income taxes can now be applied, a state income tax, not a state sales tax, a state income tax can be applied to any company doing business in another state?
That's one of the questions they have now.
Right.
And that's what I'm wondering is
it won't be warranty, it'll be income tax. It'll be income tax. Theoretically, the SSTP has stated, even though you might be liable for a sales tax, that does not mean that you're liable for an income tax. Okay, that's expressed. Okay, but if nexus is changed, and the definition of nexus is no longer, it's just economic presence, not physical presence, then pretty much every business that does business in another state would be subject to the income tax laws. Okay, there are laws here in the state of Georgia. I'm not too sure about North Carolina, but I do know Georgia only because I keep people come here, is that if you show up for 4 or 5 days here as an exhibitor, there's no question you're subject to a sales tax. But Georgia has determined that you're not going to be subject to an income tax because this is a temporary establishment and doesn't meet certain days. There are court cases in, I believe, both Canada and Ohio that if you show up to a convention and you do exactly what we're doing here, even if it's for 4 days, you owe them their sales tax and the income tax you earned on those orders. Okay? Because they determine that that exhibit is a physical presence. Okay? And therefore, there is no day requirement. There's no de minimis rule to throw it out the door.
Are they afraid of taking away the sovereignty of the states by not more normalizing these definitions? Or are they just trying to leave it up to each individual state where they want to?
It's an agreement.
Well, the SSTP is there to create common definition.
Yeah.
I mean, that is their goal, and I applaud that goal. It is not there to create uniform rates.
Right.
Each state creates its own rate. It would be nice to have uniform definition.
Right.
I mean, in New York, I mean, the joke is there are four types of boots.
Sure.
You know, and each one has a different sales rate. So it'd be great if New York just knew a boot is a friggin' boot, not a half boot, not a quarter boot, not a boot with a zipper versus a boot with a button. I mean, you can, you know, this is why the hair's gone.
Yeah.
You know, this is it.
In Florida, orange juice used to be taxed as a fruit, which is one of the things they had to get rid of to play with this. And it's not really a waiver of sovereignty. It's like a treaty between the states. Every country obeys the law of the sea, and it's not a waiver of sovereignty.
Yeah, they are very concerned. Yes, ma'am.
It's interesting that she took that particular, you went on that vein because that's where I was going. when in Florida we have part-time residents, and part-time meaning they're from Canada, they're from Michigan, they're from wherever.
A lot of them live in our mountains in my state, and they don't pay income taxes.
And that's where I was going, is we have right now homestead exemption and personal property tax and whatever. So if you're transferring from state to state back and forth, you've got your business here in North Carolina, and then you've got your business in Florida, your post office box, your whatever for your mailing and your this, that, and the other is in one state one part of the time and another state here. Doesn't matter where your consumer is, how are you going to handle your state income tax? I mean, not your income tax, your state sales tax, and who are you paying it to, and how are you doing that?
Under Streamline?
How's that going to happen?
Well, there's a... Should I take this? There's vendor software, basically, that they're qualified by Streamline. If you have a corporate entity that's incorporated in various states, you know, it's part of the agreement. You know, if you're licensed to do business, sort of know where you are. And we're talking about corporate income versus personal income tax, which are two separate things. I think that might be confusing.
No, you're talking. If you have let's again talk about that. Let's say you have a place of residence, i.e. business, also in the state of Georgia. You also in the state of Florida have a place of residence / business there. And you're 6 months in Georgia and 6 months in Florida. Well, guess what? You have a PE in both states. Okay? So as of today, prior even to the SSTP, if you basically sold a product in either state, you were required by law to collect those sales to the Florida and Georgia sales tax. Why? Because you have two physical presence. Okay? Has nothing to do with the SSTP. You were always required to collect. Whether or not you did it, that's a different issue. Okay, that's a different issue. So the SSTP in that regard wouldn't affect you for Florida and Georgia.
Okay, well, now take it a step further. In Florida, we have different counties. We have different materials that get different taxes.
Right.
Milk gets it, like you're saying, the orange juice, the milk, the this, the da,
right.
da, 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
When they go through this process, is that part of what's holding this whole thing up? Because, again, I'm just a baby here.
It's in regards to holding it up, what do you mean by holding?
I mean, is that part of the whole argument here? Is that what I'm hearing?
I've worked on legislation in my state since 2001 that have been doing this. The major shift in the definitions occurred, I think, in 2004. I remember a lot of states had the same thing. You know, having worked with legislatures for the last 7 years, nothing ever happens on time. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why things keep getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Some of it is just it takes longer. There are more fights about it. There's some places that have more Byzantine tax structure than others that require a lot more, you know, elbow grease to fix.
I mean, I would say to you that the states that are in the SSTP now are in the SSTP. They're fully compliant. They'll stay fully compliant. Even with they may have states that drop out of the SSTP because Ohio has threatened, if you don't take our revision, we're thinking of dropping out of the SSTP. But, you know, that could be all political rhetoric. You know, I don't think there are any states that are not in the SSTP that are going to be joining the SSTP at this moment. I think they're all going to wait on the fence and pretty much make a determination which way the law is going to flow, because it's an inherent unknown, you know. And if it goes all the way to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court says, you know, fellas, you guys took the definition of quill and you applied it to interstate commerce and that was never our intent, and we're not and it's not acceptable to us, then the SSTP's one of their fundamental building blocks has just been taken away. And then they're going to have to go to federal legislature and try and get that overturned. But if the Supreme Court says no, then any company that voluntarily is doing that has got a real serious issue. Because right now, they're sitting there saying, I mean, the companies are sitting there saying, well, I got quill on one hand and this, and maybe it could go through, maybe it won't. You know, I'll comply because it's not costing me anything. It's not hurting my stock price. It's not taking any money out of my pocket. because I'm charging you and passing it to them. So I have it's a non-cash flow issue for me. But if now I have a Supreme Court case that's sitting there saying no, I'm going to have a hell of a lot of consumers going to do a class action suit on me. And that's going to stop the cash flow. And it's going to be very rough for the states to sit there and say, well, you know, from 2005 to whenever Congress decides to get around with it, you're going to be liable if there's a Supreme Court case that says, no, this is an illegal tax. You can't do this. They can't, you can't go around. From the date that you do have the U.S. Congress passes a law that says, yes, we can change nexus, yeah, then from that point forward, somebody would have to collect sales tax. But the retroactiveness of this would go away. Yes, sir.
Big companies need to keep missing borders.
I just happen to like borders. Yeah. I'm sorry. I read books.
You know, somebody that does a lot of interstate business, mm-hmm.
couldn't they collect the tax, put it in an escrow fund, and tell the state, come get me? And that would force it into the court?
There are companies that are currently creating escrow. They have not agreed to voluntarily. Okay. Get on board.
It takes away the contingency you talk about.
Right. Well, they're just doing it. The issue though is that, you know, the litigation will be that a state will sue them,
mm-hmm.
okay, for the sales tax that they say they owe in the state court.
Well, and I think it's important to note that there have been some big companies that have tried to really use the online corporate structure to hide assets, like BarnesandNoble.com, their website is BNN.com. They claim that's a wholly separate corporate entity from Barnes & Noble. Never mind that you can return books there.
Yeah.
So until I think there's litigation on that currently, but
actually litigation's been resolved.
Really?
Yeah, and pretty much it's been blown out.
Yeah, I figured they pierced the veil there.
Yeah, and every state by the way, Barnes & Noble, I thought was, you know, California pierced them the first time. You know, that was about 2-3 years ago, and pretty much, you know, every state has pretty much jumped on the bandwagon. And it's true. I mean, you know, it's nice to say, hi, I have a separate entity. But basically the law does read now that if you have a separate internet entity, but you can take that internet sale mm-hmm. and take the, and return it to the brick and mortar. Well, it's A plus B. You know, it's there. I mean, and in that regard, I don't blame the states. I mean, but they have a physical place there. You know, and that's not like Abe's Books, which I think is located in, I think, Illinois, you know, and that's all it is. It's a massive, I think they have like 30,000 different titles and some massive warehouse. I mean, great, great place.
You know, and they may not be able to do that structure, with the escrow account, because, you know, all these businesses have to be incorporated somewhere. I mean, probably mostly Delaware, but, you know, in North Carolina, if you collect sales tax, even if you're not, even if the individual purchasing something is not liable for sales tax for some reason, just because you've collected an illegal tax doesn't mean you get to keep it. You still have to remit it to the state. So there may be local laws where these places are that would preclude the use of an escrow account or various other things.
And the other issue is, and we go back to stock price, if you start to create an escrow account and it starts getting large, you're going to have to footnote it. You don't want to footnote this shit. I mean, there's shit you want under the rug faster than anything under the sun. You're putting it under the rug, which means I'll remit it to the state. What do I care?
Yeah, and where does the interest go?
I mean, and the other issue is going to be on a class action suit. How many people are going to get picked up for it? Yeah. How many people are going to jump on it? So, again,
I'm currently in a panel.
Yeah, well, I guess we call this a panel now. Congratulations, I'm in a panel. Oh, great.
Okay.
And we're talking about how are they going to catch people? You know, let's talk about internet sellers and things of that nature. Well, California pretty much has passed a law, or has proposed a law, that basically eBay and Craigslist.org are going to be required to turn over all their selling lists to the state of California to make sure that California basically is getting their sales tax. So what has happened is, under the guise of SSTP, they are now basically asking companies to violate privacy rules. Which, by the way, eBay and Craigslist are saying, "Oh, we're not going to do this." Now, by the way, Craigslist we're talking Craigslist, California, and as I'm sure everyone knows, eBay is actually located in the state of California. eBay is, I think, San Jose is where it's located. So California says, hey, you're in our state. Give us all this information. But this is First Amendment issues, because they're saying, hey, you know, all our people sign privacy things. You're making us violate these privacy issues. Now, there's a part of me that says bravo to eBay and all, but between you and me, eBay is doing it because if eBay had to turn over every list of every sale that, because once, by the way, California, I believe, is in the SSTP.
Right. I don't think they're in the steering committee, but they're just a regular.
Right. Yeah. They would be required, if they got information that in this list that, ooh, there was a sales to North Carolina, and North Carolina did not get its sales tax, they are required to notify North Carolina and say, hi, how are you? Right? And if they went into a collection mode against the company, it's not a collection mode just for California. It's a collection mode for every state, every SSTP state. So that means that, you know, you take, I think it's 22. I don't know why. 18, I know, but I think it's up to 22. So they have a list of all these 22, and they say, okay, pay it. No. You owe. And then you would contact Bob here, and they would have an investigation of those companies. Go, Bob. Yeah.
I was wondering how this would work with different internet servers. Like I have a RuneScape account, and there's different servers, like based in Atlanta, in Chicago, in New York, and a bunch of different states. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, would you be taxed from each of those states?
For the transaction, or from, if you're selling to somebody. Mm-hmm. In some locale, which based on geopolitical definition would be they'll go to your address where you're shipping the good, and that will be where the sales tax is. There's issues there in regards to, obviously, you know, my state, New Hampshire, is going to have a lot of people in Massachusetts having, you know, little P.O. boxes over here. But there is issues of basically confirming and conforming them to their credit card, because using a credit card, you match the credit card address, which can be done, right? And if the addresses don't match, then you're going to end up using the credit card address. Mm-hmm. You know, so you'll only have one sales tax. So if you're buying, you'll only have one sales tax where you live. If you're selling, you'll only have one sales tax wherever that consumer is, whether or not you're using multiple ISPs all over the place.
Okay, because RuneScape is an online gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but you got to pay. I mean, you don't send a check to the different server addresses, right? You send a check to one.
Yeah. Well, you get charged by your. A perfect example would be Blizzard. Okay, if you're in Blizzard and you live in North Carolina, you are now basically being assessed on your monthly subscription. You're now being assessed a sales tax on that monthly subscription, and Blizzard is then I will make the assumption that they're giving North Carolina the money.
I'll check with our Department of Revenue and see if they've done that.
I would. They list on their website, hi, we are collecting, and they list all 18, 22 states of which, if you are located there, we're collecting sales tax. By the way, Blizzard is required to, Blizzard also collects a VAT tax if you basically are on a value-added tax. It's the European equivalent of a sales tax, sales use tax. And, you know, it's much sneakier, and also there's a hell of a lot more of the world on VAT than there is on, you know, let's say you got all of Europe, 90% of Asia. I mean, from a population perspective, Canada's on VAT, India just went on VAT. There's a lot of bodies that are basically subject to VAT. We have sales tax. And there is obviously, you know, you always hear rumblings of a national sales tax, but that pretty much will never get passed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a political nonsense.
Yeah.
It will never get past politically.
And there's benefit for having a locality able to control, besides from property taxes, to be able to control a stream of income for specific reasons. I mean,
that's okay. Don't mind
even me. Though a lot of them remit centrally to and they get redistributed.
Yeah, I'll turn it off.
That's political theory. So. Okay.
Yes, sir. And then we got to roll it, close it up.
Yeah.
I noticed that you mentioned that if you purchase something online, you're supposed to declare the amount and all the tax due or so forth on your state income tax. Mm-hmm. How many people do you think actually keep track of how much they purchase online and do that?
I believe that most people, I believe that no one keeps track, I would say, I can't say no one. I'm sure there's somebody out there that has that anal compulsion to do
that.
I mean, I got to be honest. I would state to you that since I do prepare tax returns, I am a CPA, that one of my questions is, do you do a use tax? I mean, do you buy out of state, and if that state has a sales tax, which is a requirement, New Hampshire doesn't, obviously. Mm. And they say, well, yes, I did, and my statement is, great, what sticks in your mind? Give me a dollar amount, because we're going to declare it, and we're going to put it on that tax return. Whether or not that amount is a correct amount, I would say probably not. But I think that if they are doing it and they admit to me as a practitioner that they're doing it, then I'm required to put a number on that line. Okay? And I think that there are a lot of people. I know one person, and I know her. I mean, I love her. She's a dear person of mine. And I know if she did maybe $300 worth of internet and didn't do sales tax, that's a lot because this is her nature. She makes me declare $10,000. I know she didn't buy $10,000.
Yeah.
But this is her nature. I mean, you have to go, taxes are based on personalities. There are some people that never want to see a state agent knocking at their door.
Yeah.
They just don't want to see it. Never will happen. And they will sit there and say, I mean, there are legitimate expenses people can take, and they won't take it. I've been cut off.
Yep.
I would like to thank you for joining me.
Thank you.